This is Thursday, February 16th, 2012. We are in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's Continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Maureen Sullivan. Our cameraman is Dan McDermott of Natick Pegasus. We are privileged to have with us today Richard Brenneman, Jr. Welcome, Dick.
Thank you.
May I ask when you were born?
I was born on March 30th, 1925.
And where were you born?
I was born in Huntingdon, Pennsylvania.
And where is Huntington?
Next door to State College, Central Pennsylvania.
Okay. And what town do you currently live in?
I currently live in Natick.
And how long have you lived in Natick?
Off and on since 1938.
Your marital status?
Single.
Single.
Was married. Mm.
Do you have children?
Yes.
How many?
Five.
Do you have grandchildren?
Six. Mm.
Great-grandchildren? Any great-grandchildren?
Five.
Good for you. Now tell us what Natick was like just before World War II.
Small. I lived in West Natick on Hartford Street. Yeah, that was rural then. Mm-hmm. It has changed.
And how did you get to Natick High School and back?
There was a bus pickup, but most of the time I, way back from sports, I was summer ride and walk up Bowdoin Lane and
and what class of Natick High did you graduate?
1943.
And I understand you got a special honor. What honor was that?
In Natick High School?
Mm-hmm.
Did I get an honor?
I understand you were voted, you had the best something. What was that?
I don't have the slightest idea.
Well, I heard you were voted, had the best physique at Natick High School.
I just don't remember.
All right. Now, did you play sports at Natick High?
Hmm?
Did you play sports?
Football.
Football. Is there anything else you remember about your days at Natick High or Natick in general?
That was... No, I'll answer you no. You know, everything back then, you know, it's a little bit foggy.
Mm-hmm.
From high school, I went directly into the Navy, and that was one of the times I didn't live in Natick.
Okay. So where and when did you enter the military?
I think I went in June 1943.
And why did you pick the Navy, or did the Navy pick you?
Like many things, I volunteered.
Mm-hmm. And did family or friends join the service when you did?
Probably. Yeah, the people in my graduating class were all either drafted or volunteered. We just scattered.
Okay, where did you go for basic training?
Newport, Rhode Island.
And can you tell us what basic training in Newport was like?
Spit and polish.
Anything else about it?
Last time I slept in a hammock.
Was there anything you liked about basic training or disliked about it?
There wasn't much I liked, no. like all basic training, it was, remember to polish your shoes and march and parade. And, I don't think I learned much there, but.
Now, did you receive any advanced or specialized training beyond basic?
I went from basic training to Gunner's Meat School in Newport. And after that, I went to submarine school in New London, Connecticut.
And why did you go to submarine school?
I was 18 and everything was an adventure. I don't know if I'd re-volunteer.
What did you know about submarines at the time?
Excuse me.
As an 18-year-old, what did you know about submarines at that time?
I knew nothing. it was an opportunity to do something different. That's why I volunteered. I ended up serving 2 years and a little over 2 years in submarines. I was from submarine school. I was assigned to a new submarine in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Lived on it for 2 years. It was quite a ride.
Well, let's get back to New London and submarine school. What do you remember about that?
Submarine school. Part of the training was going to sea in a submarine that was built in 1917, the old U-boat. Everything was mechanical. I remember that. The other thing in submarine school was your ability to come out an escape hatch and get to the surface 50 foot higher. Yeah, it was standard training. All that was aimed, probably some other scaring chickens out of the coop. So, if you could pass or going to sea on an old boat, swimming to the surface with the moms in long, you were a candidate to go to sea on a submarine.
Okay. And how long were you in training at submarine school?
It was, those were hurry up days. I was probably there for 10 weeks.
So now you are in New Hampshire. Do you remember the name of the sub?
Yeah, Scabbard Fish. S-C-A-B-B-A-R-D F-I-S-H, number 397.
And this was a brand new submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what some of the differences were between what you were training on and what you were about to be assigned to.
Mainly size. Mm-hmm. You know, the starboard push was 311 feet long. Yeah, it's like a football field.
Mm.
Sub at that point was 27 foot wide. It was a mansion compared to the old boat.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you're in New Hampshire and you're assigned to a brand new sub. How often did you go out to sea?
Well, after they launched it, you know, they were building it up there.
Mm-hmm.
Went into a training period that took us down the East Coast through the Panama Canal and out to Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And every place we stopped, there was additional training, either for gunnery, torpedoes, mm-hmm. or learning how to operate the boat.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the time, what was your rank?
I was seaman first class when I was assigned to the scabbard fish.
Mm-hmm.
I was a gunner's mate second class when I resigned from the submarines.
Okay. And what were your duties on the sub?
You have to ask that or understand that question in two aspects. One was straight operational.
Mm-hmm.
We stood two watches a day, 4 hours apiece. I served as a lookout, helmsman, mm-hmm. and bow planesman. One of the unique things about submarines was to qualify and get that extra pay. In fact, just to remain in submarines, you had to understand and be able to perform any basic operation in any compartment of the boat, and you were generally given one patrol to accomplish that, and that's when you became entitled to wear dolphins.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little more about that trip you took to Pearl Harbor.
From here to Pearl Harbor?
Mm-hmm.
That's one long way. Well, you know, a submarine in those days, we could average, I'll say it in English terms, 10 miles an hour. And that was a long way from Panama to mm-hmm. Pearl Harbor. And during that trip, you know, you practiced diving, all emergency mm-hmm. procedures. Now, you were pretty busy.
Did you see the enemy at any time?
Did I?
Did you see the enemy at any time during your trip?
Yes, ma'am, we did. Ooh. We made 5 successful war patrols. We were shot at, we were depth charged, we were bombed, and we made it back. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little more about all that.
Let me just tell you one incident that remains in my mind. Mm-hmm. We sank a Japanese submarine off the shores of Honolulu. It was pure luck that we saw him and he didn't see us. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when that took place?
That was probably in November 1944. Okay. I'd like to just expound on that briefly, I hope.
Expound away.
You know, you watch submarine things on television, the movies, everything is boom, boom, boom. That's not quite so. After we spotted that submarine, it took hours of tracking that sub before we got in a position to put up the periscope, make the last range bearing thing on mm-hmm. it. Then we fired 2 torpedoes. Both hit the submarine. You know, it sank almost immediately. We came to the surface and there were 3 survivors. Two wouldn't touch the lifeline that we were trying. We needed to pick up survivors for information purpose. And we picked up Sasaki, it turned out to be his name. Mm-hmm. And I was gunner's mate, and we got him pulled out of the water. I was ordered to get my Tommy gun and get down and make sure that he didn't do anything out of line. It was, if you've never been on a submarine, we stopped to pick him up. A submarine will roll and roll and roll. And here I am with a Tommy gun and 3 members of the life-saving crew on board. Mm-hmm. And boy, I kept my finger off the trigger on that Tommy gun. And we got him down below, and they tried to question me. He was very young, Japanese sailor. After they found out that we'd sunk the I-365, he became my responsibility. I took him back to the rear torpedo room where I lived, chained him to his bunk, and it was my job for the next 2 or 3 weeks to make sure that he was fed and given whatever care he needed mm-hmm. before we got back to Midway Island. And last I saw of Sasaki, he's about 5 foot tall. We turned him over to a Marine detachment. These guys are all 6 foot tall with rifles, and I felt sorry for the guy. Last I ever heard of him.
Mm-hmm. While he was under your care and protection, did he speak any English? How did you communicate?
He knew no English whatsoever. We did everything with hand gestures, and he probably learned a few words from. He was on board for 2 to 3 weeks, mm-hmm. as I remember it. Mm-hmm. So he probably learned a few words. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't try anything on you or anything?
Oh, no, no.
You mentioned earlier your sub being attacked with death charges. Now, of course, people have seen that in the movies. Tell us what that was like.
We were depth charged 4 or 5 different occasions. One was very serious. A depth charge, you know, is a little bit different than when you see it on television. A depth charge makes 2 noises. One is whack, which is the detonator, then there's the boom. And if there's a delay between whack and boom, you're fairly safe. But when you don't hear the whack, just the boom, they are close. Mm-hmm. And we were depth charged in that occasion for 4 hours in the East China Sea. And after the first salvo, I remember there were 6 depth charges, and we could hear the destroyer, you know, chugging overhead. Yeah, we got deep enough so that, it was fairly safe. We ended up at 500 feet, which was below recommended depth, but we did it. And we had subsequent depth charge attacks, but none that close. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can hear that whack, boom, you know, you felt safe. Our perhaps best service that we did was later on in the war when we were assigned to lifeguard duty. That means you pick up a pilot or airplane crews mm-hmm. when they were shot down or force landed. And we picked up 22 airmen.
And was this over a specific part of the Pacific Ocean or just kind of wherever you were?
We were on 5 patrols. We were in different areas. We picked up people off of Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. We we picked up people off of Honshu. It was funny. One of our pickups, we went very close in the shore, and we picked this guy up, and he had an English accent. He was off of a British carrier, mm-hmm. off of Japan. This is last couple of months of the war. And it was a shock to hear him talk. but we pick these guys up and either take them back to probably Guam, or mm-hmm. sometimes we would meet another submarine on his way back to, say, Guam, and transfer the guys, mm-hmm. you know, at nighttime. It'd get close, and we had rubber boats, and we put them in, and they pulled them across to the other boat. Mm-hmm. It got a little bit crowded at one point where, you know, submarines in those days had a normal crew of 82 people. And when you got 10 extra guys on board, airmen, mm-hmm. you know, it got a little bit crowded.
I can understand that, yeah.
you know, it was a different operation. Every patrol, every day was mm-hmm. different. Sort of. But, you know, no matter what was going on, you had to stand two operational watches, mm-hmm. plus take care of your specialty. My technical job was take care of those guns on deck. Picture you have shows 20 millimeter gun.
Mm-hmm. Grab that. And this is the shot.
Yeah.
Okay. And you would be so kind as to show that for our. That's
the blue one is many years later. That's mm-hmm. Tom on the foredeck there.
And Tom's one of your sons?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It was a Cub Scout. What do you do with Cub Scouts?
Well, let's get back to the latter days of the war. You're mentioning Midway, Iwo Jima, Honshu, some of the hot spots. Did you see any of the action taking place?
The action, except we weren't there mm-hmm. At the time that was going on. Mm-hmm. Midway was a submarine base mm-hmm. as well as an air base, and we would fuel up on Midway. Load up with supplies, mm-hmm. take off for Japan. And at that point, it was a 10-day trip to Japan. And you did whatever you had to, and mm-hmm. then you'd start back to Midway Island because you were running out of diesel fuel, you were running out of supplies, and any place looked good, even Midway. And after a while, as the war went on, we would do the same thing at Guam or Saipan. That was refuel, rest up, take off again operation. One of the advantages of being on a submarine, after a patrol, you got 2 weeks of rest and recreation.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Mm-hmm. No duties. And other relief crew would repaint the boat, make repairs, put in. But you had 2 weeks to rest, drink beer, play football, baseball, what have you. And then it was back to the sub again and repractice and take off on another patrol.
Okay. Do you remember any of your submates, any make any friends while you were on duty?
There were a couple of guys that I met when I was first assigned in Scabbard Fish. We were remained friends for forever with them. At this point, I don't know of anybody who was on the boat with me. You know, that was almost 70 years ago. And but we were good friends for
Would you care to mention their names?
Yeah, one of them was Forrest Cowgill. He was from Oregon. And the other one was Leon Stilke, who was from Maine. And, you know, we were all young kids, and we served together for 2 years.
Okay, let's bring you up to, say, the spring of 1945. Do you remember what you were doing when VE Day was announced?
Yep. We were on our way back to Guam, and word came through to us about halfway between Honshu and Guam, and somebody woke me up and said the war's over. And we just continued en route down to Guam. And, went from Guam to Eniwetok. You know, they didn't know what to do with us at that point. So we were basically parked down in Eniwetok for, let's see, during September and October. And we got back to San Francisco first part of December 45.
Now, you mentioned you resigned. Was this from the subservice, or? You mentioned earlier in the interview that you had resigned.
Oh.
So what happened that?
Well, we're out Mare Island, and you know, everybody was, yeah, the war's over, everybody's mm-hmm. going home. I used the word resign loosely. Mm-hmm. I was offered an opportunity to get my discharge in mm-hmm. Toledo, Ohio. So I took it.
Okay. So you took a discharge, and when were you discharged?
I think it was March 1946.
Okay. And where were you discharged?
Toledo, Ohio. Simply because Boston was full mm-hmm. and Toledo was taking people on, so mm-hmm. I volunteered.
Again with a volunteer.
Yeah. Some people never learn.
So you got discharged in Toledo, Ohio. Did you go back to Natick after the war?
I came back to Natick. Mm-hmm.
And what did it? What were your feelings about coming back home?
Feelings were good. You know, my friends were coming back here, and my wife-to-be was here. She was born in Natick.
Mm-hmm. And what's your wife's name?
Was Joan Powers.
Joan?
Powers.
Oh, Powers,
P-O-W-E-R-S. Okay. At that point, I took a job whenever you could find something. I worked in construction for mm-hmm. a short while and decided I didn't want to dig ditches mm-hmm. and took a government advantage of going back to school.
And what did you major in school?
Chemistry.
Chemistry. And where'd you go to school?
Boston University. That was a different operation then.
Mm-hmm.
Much smaller.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do with the chemistry degree?
I worked for a couple of years for American Cyanamid down in Stamford, Connecticut. At that point, I had a wife, two kids. I took a job with Arthur D. Little in Cambridge. I worked for them for 35 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned you had five children or four?
Hmm?
You mentioned you had children.
One by one, I end up with five.
Okay.
Tom's the oldest. Mm-hmm. Best looking.
Okay. Did any of your children enter the military?
Tom, briefly. Were you drafted, Tom? Not voluntarily.
How about any of your grandchildren?
No.
After the war, did you join any service organizations, such as the American Legion or VFW?
There was a sub-vet organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was largely a volunteer thing. They finally couldn't find people or funding to run anymore, mm-hmm. went out of business. And, well, they didn't go out of business. they merge with the, there's a current Submarine Veterans Association, but ours was distinguished with the World War II numbers. And we had conventions quite a few places, and I went to a number of them.
Are you active in any organizations now?
No.
And I take it you're retired now?
Yeah. whatever that means.
Dick, is there anything else you'd like to say to those who are watching, of such as what did service mean to you?
Well, the point that I was in, you know, there was a general feeling in the country that everybody was behind you. We were attacked, and we were fulfilling our duty.
And is there anything else you'd like to say as we conclude this interview?
No, it's been a unique experience, Maureen, and I want to thank you for being allowed to say a few words.
Well, Richard Brenneman, Jr., thank you so much for taking part in the Natick Veterans Oral History Project.
You're welcome.
Okay.